Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Now, The Surfer is a beach psychodrama in which everything goes wrong in the most barmy and most Nicolas Cage way imaginable. The everlasting star, because he is everlasting, he's the lead in this baking hot Australian film about a surfer's turf war and toxic manliness. And it was a top 10 box office hit at US cinemas last weekend. It arrives in Irish cinemas this Friday, and it comes from Irish director Lorcan Finnegan. Welcome to studio, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks for
having me. And congratulations. This is very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is cool. Yeah, it's great that it's finally coming out, because we premiered like nearly a year ago at Cannes. So
where it got a 6-minute standing ovation, I believe.
Yeah, well, Nick actually disputes that. He thinks he believes it's still happening.
That's what he's like. Now, you have a knack for getting Hollywood stars into your films, don't you? Because there were previously Jesse Eisenberg in the housing crisis mad drama Vivarium. Is that how you pronounce that?
Vivarium. Vivarium.
Oh, Vivar.
No, Vivarium,
right,
yeah.
Okay, right. Now it's Nicolas Cage. How did you get Nicolas Cage to sign up?
I suppose we got lucky, really. The script was written by Thomas Martin. It was a very good script.
Another Irishman.
And we sent it to his manager, hoping that, you know, it was a bit of a long shot, and he sent it to Nick. And Nick, first thing actually he loved was the title. He was telling me just last week that he saw The Surfer, and he grew up in California, so he was like, oh yeah, man, surfing, yeah, yeah, I know that. And then he had seen Vivarium, actually.
Did he?
Yeah. He's mad into films. Like he's like an encyclopedia of cinema. Mm-hmm. And then he went and watched Nocebo, another film of mine, and he was like, okay, yeah, this guy, I like him. And then he read the script, and he thought, I love this. It's Kafka-esque, it's challenging, it's...
I'm loving your Nicolas Cage impression.
Well, yeah. Lorcan! That's the way he pronounced my name. He just really liked the script and totally connected with it. And then we got on a call, and we got on very well. We're both into the same kind of films. Similar sense of humour, and yeah, it was a great collaboration then for the, you know, there was a few months of sort of back and forth, little tweaks to the script and stuff like that, and then once we got on set, it was all go.
What are your shared film interests with Nick Cage?
I mean, a lot of older films, a lot of, like we both loved The Swimmer actually, which was influence on this film.
A lot of references in the reviews to it, yeah.
Yeah, well, he kind of channeled Burt Lancaster a little bit. Yeah, there's a scene in the film where he kind of looks up to the house that he's trying to buy, and he's like, right up there on Clifftop Drive.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen that film, so that's what that little
right,
nod
okay,
to
you
it.
Check it out. It's great, yeah. It's a very unusual film, but it's brilliant.
How would you describe, or how do you attract people to this film? I mean, it's like the stress of Uncut Gems, the Adam Sandler one.
It is a bit, yeah.
And what else? How else would you draw people to it?
I'd say it's like, on the surface level, there's like, it's comedy, it's action, it's... torment, it's psychological dread, it's all of the kind of fun stuff, and an amazing performance by Nick Cage. But then on another level, and there's all this, you know, there's these themes around masculinity and crisis.
Oh, yeah,
and,
big time, yeah.
And all of that, and basically an incredible look at men's faces, I think, in the film. I actually asked Nick to grow out his nasal hair and his ear hair and his eyebrow hair and everything, so that he kind of uses face as a landscape.
His stubble is almost like his lips have disappeared. Yeah. You know, this kind of strong beard growth.
Yeah. But so on one level, it's, you know, pure entertainment. On another level, it's, you know, an exploration into all this, and it's kind of existential and cerebral, and you can kind of pick it apart afterwards, some of the kind of more Jungian themes throughout the film.
A sign of a really good idea is that it's a simple plot to explain.
Yes. A man arrives at a beach. He tries to buy back this family home and that he grew up in Australia, left when he was about 12, is returning in his 50s, trying to buy back this home, and thinks that it's going to fix all of his problems with his marriage and with his relationship with his son. And it doesn't.
It goes horribly wrong.
Instead, he encounters the actual locals who are kind of ruling the beach down there and won't let him surf and won't let him stay there and just want him gone. But being a man and being stubborn, he decides, no, because I'm being told I'm going to to leave, that I don't belong here, I'm going to stay here. And then over the course of about 4 days, he's sort of stripped of all his materialistic
while living in the car park.
Yes.
And it's such a beach, it's like a universal beach, remote beach car park, isn't it? The filthy toilets.
Yeah.
One source of water, the cafe that may not or may open.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And then obviously down into the beach with the wilderness all around it.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful spot that we shot in. It was in Western Australia. This
yeah, what's called. The name of that little...
It's called Yallingup.
That's very Australian.
Very Australian.
You're not making that up.
No,
like no. AI generator, Creek. Come up with Australian surf town. Yeah. Yallingup.
Yells, mate.
Yeah. How did they take to the idea that you were doing a locals only, a kind of a violent locals only surf beach? Does that carry on, go on in Australia?
Yeah, unfortunately, not that much. I mean, it does in some parts of Australia, like Sydney and Melbourne and stuff. And I was kind of hoping to encounter a little bit more localism while filming there. But everyone was just very nice.
They're very generous.
Yeah.
The Bay Boys is what the gang is called, which seems like a really innocuous name for a gang, a scary gang.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's described as more of an unofficial club by the cop in the movie.
The LA Times is saying this must be loosely based on an actual Californian group called Bay Boys.
Well, the Lanuda Bay guys, I suppose. I mean, it's basically this phenomenon in Lanuda Bay where in California there's this sort of crescent-shaped beach with these big modernist houses perched along the clifftop and very exclusive, very expensive area. And if you try and surf there, the guys will batter you.
Quite literally.
Literally.
And this trouble has been going since the 60s.
Yeah, but the thing is that they're not, you know, it's not like Point Break where these guys are, you know, tough surfer gang kind of guys. These are all like hedge fund managers and lawyers and bankers and stuff. So like during the day, they're buttoned up in their suits, you know, and talking to clients. And then when they're down on the beach, they turn much more primal and animalistic. And that's what sort of interested Thomas Martin in this idea of like, what is it about these guys? What is it that makes them become so kind of tribalistic?
Because he had witnessed something in Australia, as it happens, didn't he?
Something similar where he was in Sydney and he saw some surfers getting out of their wetsuits and putting on their kind of business suits. And then suddenly they started fighting each other on the beach and like really violently, blood everywhere, you know, missing teeth, all of that. And in his mind, he was thinking one's like a lawyer and the other's a dentist. And like, what's the deal with that?
Yeah.
And that's when he kind of discovered the Lanuda Bay thing. And then he was also reading Robert Drew's short stories. He's like an Australian writer of fiction, you know, but he writes a lot of kind of interesting, weird stories around people in these surf locations in Australia. So I guess it all kind of got mashed up together and turned into the surfer.
In terms of the length of time filming, how long are you living in Western Australia for this?
I was there for 3 months in the end.
3 months?
Yeah. I thought I'd become an amazing surfer in that time, but making a film is kind of time consuming.
Do you surf yourself?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have surfed. Have you?
Not at all. Wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult.
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
I can do the paddle boarding thing. What do you call the thing where you just lie on your chest and let the waves take you in?
Yeah, exactly. Boogie boarding.
Crash. Yeah, is that a boogie boarding?
Boogie boarding, yeah.
There are different names in Australia, are there?
Probably.
But I love how they have the money. They still have the waterproof money for surfing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is that what it's for?
Plasticky
yeah.
Water.
Yeah, very plasticky money. It's impossible to rip.
Yeah, that's right. Why would you be doing that? And Nicolas Cage, he stayed in a famous surfer's house, I think, did he?
Yeah, it's a guy called Taj Burrows. He's like one of the top guys. And he... yeah, he rented his house, which is an amazing big house that looks over Yallingup Beach. And that kind of helped us with the local surfers, sort of ingratiate us with them. Because we needed them
the
on side because we were shooting the beach the whole time. We needed, you know, we needed them to not disrupt filming if they didn't like us. Well, not totally cleared. I mean, if they wanted to go surfing, we weren't going to stop them. And a lot of them ended up being in the movie and a lot of them ended up working on location, like, being assistant location managers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all the locals were in the film. Like, we were quite remote. Yeah. So, like, even the owner of Caves Hotel, the local hotel, is, like, in the film. You know, this guy, he sees Nick picking up this rat and he's about to bite out of it.
Yeah,
and he's holding
a
fluffy dog.
Yeah,
he's
the owner of the hotel.
He's the owner of the hotel.
With the crew are all staying, obviously.
Yeah.
So that's one way of ingratiating. Because it must be difficult to get a crew out to a remote location.
Well, particularly Western Australia. Yeah, we brought a lot of people over from the east, and a lot of them drove all the way across Australia, which is crazy.
That's that thing where you have to notify the town you're going to, don't you? That we're due at this hour, so if we don't arrive, something's gone wrong.
Oh, right. Yeah. Check Wolf Creek.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's an incredibly compelling actor, Nicolas Cage, still after all of this time.
Mm.
There are moments when you think there's no way this can get worse for the character, or the insanity cannot possibly be conveyed, but he manages to do it somehow.
Mm.
What is it like directing a man who's made over 100 films?
Yeah, it's great, actually. To be honest, it's not. I think people have a misconception of him as being some sort of like wild man that you let out of a cage and he does whatever he wants. He's actually just extremely prepared, and he knows the script inside out. He actually reads it backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. I don't think the words backwards, but the pages.
He starts at the end. He starts at this.
Okay. Yeah, so like when he gets onto set, he never needs to look at it again. And so he's incredible in that way. And also, I think because we both like to work fast, it was just a good match between our energies.
Yeah.
And that left room then for improv and for having fun on set and playing around. I think that sort of developed as we were making the film. We realized that some stuff was pretty funny and we were kind of pushing that to the surface a bit, you know.
Am I meant to be laughing out loud at times?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah, I do, you know. Yeah.
Did he improvise some of the kind of terrible things happening to this man himself at the moment?
I mean, there's certain lines of dialogue. Like there's a scene where he's walking around the car park in his bare feet, completely delirious from...
Because he started in a lovely suit and a nice Lexus.
Exactly. He starts very well-groomed, wealthy businessman. In a couple of days, he's stripped of everything and he doesn't know even who he is.
So he's walking around barefoot.
So he's walking around barefoot and he's asking people, have they seen his broker anywhere, Mike? And I think in the script it was written that, you know, he's asking, has anyone seen my broker? And then rambling incoherently.
That's great. I love that too. That was very good.
So the rambling incoherently, you know, then Nick was let run. We were shooting on a really wide angle, 8mm lens. So all the crew had to kind of hide in cars around the place.
Yeah.
And we, because you can see everything, walked around and he started going on about, I want to make dinner for my wife on the balcony. I'm going to make her clams casino and puttanesca pasta. And like that scene ran on for longer than is in the film. He started actually singing Jump Around by House of Pain. Which is great. I think he has this sort of thing inside him that he needs to let loose. So that, and then this there's a scene in the film where he shoves a rat in somebody's face and says, eat the rat.
Yeah.
And that was something that came to him.
Did the actor know that was going to happen?
Well, we did do a quick rehearsal. It was basically in the script, he picked up the rat and he was like a burrito. He's about to bite into it. And then the guy from Cave's house, the hotel guy, sees him. And then he was supposed to just drop it and we could go on with the rest of the film. But he put it in his pocket. And Nick just had this idea of wanting to keep the rat in his pocket. He was like, I need it. I don't know why, but I need it. I feel like I need to keep it. And it was like a prop rat. So the art department, we only had one.
It looked
like,
great. Yeah. It looked very, very convincing.
Well, they wanted to put it in a box and keep it safe. But Nick just really wanted to keep it in his pocket. And then the next day he told me this idea that it formulated that was based on the movie Sabrina with Audrey Hepburn, and there's a scene where a character takes an olive and shoves it in another guy's mouth and says, eat it. And that's somehow linked to our film. And
he's got a lot of old films rattling around his head.
So exactly.
Inspired at various moments.
Yeah,
so there must be pinch me moments for you, you know, where you're coming as a young filmmaker all these years, and suddenly you've got Nicolas Cage wandering around with a rat in his pocket and you're in Western Australia on the beach going, I think I've made it.
I don't know. Yeah, it's pretty surreal, all right. Strange. I mean, you have to kind of compartmentalize that stuff and just, I do my job, he does his job, and we all just sort of try and do our best, make the best film possible.
The villain is great. And I think there's something about when you've got an American actor and you're kind of expecting it to be almost an American film, and then an Australian villain shows up.
Mm.
and ruggedly sun-beaten, but he's got these eggshell teeth, which makes you hate him straight away. And he's the kingpin of the toxic manhood that we see.
Yeah, yeah. His character's name is Scally. He's played by Julian McMahon, who people might know from Nip Tuck or Doctor Doom. And yeah, he's great. I mean, he left Australia when he was about 20, I think. So it took him a while to actually get the Australian accent back again.
Really?
But yeah, so him and Nick, there's amazing chemistry between them. He's a very handsome man, but he's slightly taller than Nick as well. So there's a scene in the car park by this old battered jalopy, and he's trying to get him to eat food, trying to tempt him with food so that he'll leave if he eats this kind of burger from the beach. And that was the first time they'd ever met. This scene, it's a very intense scene where Julian's holding Nick's face, and he's like, you know, and there's flies crawling all over them as well. There was like an outbreak of flying ants that day, and that was the first time they'd met. We had no time for rehearsals, and Julian sort of arrived.
They literally
late.
Hadn't met until
exactly. So like at that point, Nick's voice has already changed. He's got blood all over his face.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going down to that beach and I'm going to surf that break. He's like, nah, you're not. We're grabbing him by the face. And,
the most manly scene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we were very lucky that the chemistry just worked on screen. I was just had a little monitor and I was just watching the two of them together. And I was like, oh, God, thank God.
It was very clever to have this kind of older man in charge of the younger horrible gang with their annoying pink sunblock across their face and their beach or sun bleached hair and so on.
Yeah.
Obviously that's on purpose given the kind of the tycoons who tend to be older running all the men online at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. He's sort of like an amalgamation of Jordan Peterson, Joe Rogan kind of a guy. Tim Morrison. He's slightly more of he's half guru, kind of corporate guru who will like, you know, there's these people who bring people off on retreats and get them to connect with their inner animal man and then go back to the office and fire 300 people or something.
Because you want to say a lot, don't you, about consumerism and property ownership, I'd imagine, is what you're talking about, because you have the beach itself being sort of the last bit of public property that people can go on to and achieve their freedom. Mm. And yet you've got this group who are sort of treating it, they're possessing it, aren't they, and trying to block other people from coming in.
That's yeah, completely. It's sort of ownership, I suppose. And also, you know, about identity and belonging. You know, Nick's character just wanting to belong to something. And all these guys, the Bay Boys, wanting to belong to something. And this manipulative, charismatic character, Scally, played by Julian McMahon, kind of sucking them into his weird little cult.
Is it a risk in this day and age to make a film that doesn't have any women in the central casting?
Well, I mean, this is about men in a way, you know. So there's a couple of women in this. And the only person who's actually nice to Nick is played by Miranda Tapsell, who's Indigenous. She's the only Indigenous person who actually does belong there. There's one other lady who smoke cigarettes with a dog poo bag in her hand simultaneously.
You've given, well, the writer's given her amazing lines.
Yeah, yeah, she actually has some great lines, yeah.
And she's tragic but also almost part of it at the same time.
Yeah, she's kind of a pro-masculine bullying.
Because it will leave the women alone.
Boys will be boys is kind of her attitude.
I mean, there are some great messages.
If it stops them beating the Botox out of their wives, so be it.
In between the biting of rats and all the kind of fun moments, you have the kind of scathing moments in the film, which I think really, really hold it together nicely. Mm. Did Nicolas Cage, not a lot of surfing in the film, by the way.
No, not really. No. But that's like the swimmer, you know, it's not a film about swimming.
Yes, exactly.
It's actually his name. He doesn't have a name in the movie. He's just the surfer.
Does he surf in real life, Nicolas Cage?
Well, he did a bit of surfing in the film towards the end, but so we had to train when he first arrived. He went out and with a teacher, you know, just kind of get him back up to speed with paddling and getting popping up on the board and everything. And within about 2 hours, he was standing up and just catching waves. So
he's a very determined man.
Very determined. And he's like 60. And, he's got a lot of energy.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
I presume he's just gone on and he's making more films now as we speak, probably off.
Yeah, he's making a film called Madden. Yeah.
What's next for you?
I'm working on a few different things. I'm working on another project with the same screenwriter, mm-hmm. A thriller set in Venice, and I'm working on another project with Garrett Shanley, who's another writer I worked with on Vivarium.
Vivarium, yeah.
On a film called Goliath, which is like a near future dystopian fable about creating monsters in order to start wars.
This sounds mad. Is that the one with pigs in it?
Yes.
Okay. Well researched. Have I seen the trailer for that?
No, we haven't started shooting yet.
So in the meantime, The Surfer, has Nicolas Cage moved on? Are you still in touch or does he have to go out and play?
No, he's still in touch. Yeah, he was texting me last night. Yeah, no, we plan on doing something together again.
Oh, great.
Because we got on very well and it's good.
Is he just texting you work things or does he send you films you need to watch?
No, work things or just things that he might have read, like some interview where he thinks it should be corrected.
Oh, right.
Yeah, things like that.
He's a detailed guy.
He's a very detailed guy. Yeah.
Wow, what a great experience that was. As we look forward to seeing it. The Surfer, directed by Lorcan Finnegan and written by Thomas Martin, opens in Irish cinemas this Friday and it is rated 15A, I believe.
I believe so.
And it's an hour and 40 minutes.
And it's everywhere.
Great crack. I was annoyed that I had to watch it on my laptop as part of the research because it needs to be seen, it begs to be seen on the big screen, which I was planning to when I heard about it last week before I even knew you were involved, Lorcan. But Lorcan Finnegan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And sure, we'll talk to you for the next thing, maybe.
I hope so, yes.
Talk to you again. Email